National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both be run Friday, May 31st, on a card that also includes two Pennsylvania bred stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 15th.
Racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
An app created specifically for horse racing. Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Scholarships are available. Visit rtip.arizona.edu.
Mr. Kirk, Dexter's in school.
I'm afraid he's not, Miss Fishmore. Dexter's truancy problem is way out of hand. The Baltimore County School Board have decided to expel Dexter from the entire public school system.
Well, Mr. Kirk, I'm as upset as you to learn Dexter's truancy, but surely expulsion is not the answer.
I'm afraid expulsion is the only answer. It is the opinion of the entire staff that Dexter is criminally insane. Sane.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
That boy needs therapy.
Psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Purely psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Lie down on the couch.
What does that mean?
You're a nut.
You're a nut.
You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean? That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Brannigazoo, let's have it, you. I want to count three.
That boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.
We're back and reaching deep into the stacks of ATR Wax, the Avalanche, and Frontier Psychiatrist, which we haven't heard in ages. It always gets a big response. Susie Rasher, for those of you who know Pony Ace, the fabulous photographer, she chronicles all the centennial horses, and of course works for Adam and Naira Photo, and that's her absolute favorite, Frontier Psychiatry, and it's perfect for today because it it's funny, Joe. I wrote to you about my nutty schedule, and it really has I have fulfilled all of this in terms of the nuttiness today.
You never know where live radio, TV, or anything's going to go. So that's the fun. That's why people listen.
You know what? You're right. And I, if we go careening off the rails, I never mind. And today was a perfect example because the whole thing with Kenny McPeak, Gentle Ken, and the animal shows, I cannot believe what is going on. I've got now like a dozen emails. And some things, some really interesting things. Plus, I heard from Patty Costello. He's writing to me about Skippy the Bush Kangaroo, a show when they were growing up in Ireland. It was an Australian show that they watched, Skippy the Bush Kangaroo.
That one I don't know.
It's the craziest thing. Rich Migliori says he was a big Doctari, and the first show that he saw in color was Doctari. It's hysterical. What about the Clancy family? What was the Clancy family favorites?
Well, I still trot out Wilbur Come in the Room when I'm confused about something. So, you know, Mr. Ed was there for sure, and Flipper, and you mentioned General Ken, so General Ben, these are all, I'm sure, come up. But more, not necessarily pets, but what about that Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom with the animals? You know, come on, that was can't miss television.
Well, Sid Fernando, he went in that direction, and then he followed it up with an entry. Doctari was his entry made, actually. It was very funny.
You can go cartoons, too, can't we? You go Scooby-Doo and Astro from the Jetsons, and Dino from the Flintstones.
Well, Astro is one of the great cartoon animals of all time. But you're leaving out the absolute. I'm not a Scooby Doo guy. However, I am a Magilla Gorilla. Gorilla for sale. And also, I'll tell you who else is underrated on this, if we're going to go in this direction. Quick Draw McGraw.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was good.
Snagglepuss.
What was the horse with the guitar?
Oh,
wasn't the horse with the guitar?
Yeah.
El Caban.
Oh, my God. A huge reach. A tremendous pull from Joe Clancy. Unbelievable. Well, and we haven't even ventured into the cartoon mouse category. That's a category unto itself. Quick Draw McGraw. Right? Oh, and what about TC? Part. What about Top Cat? TC. Hey, TC. Oh, my God. This is so funny. You know who would be good for this conversation is Peter Lurie, who I'm sure has done a number of voices for cartoon. I know does cartoon voices. Right? And Frank, yeah. I should get Miramati in here. He could do all of these. Underdog. What about Underdog, Sweet Polly Underdog. Purebred? Come on.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. Let me ask a question. On Gentle Ben.
Oh.
Was that, I know, Matt Schiffman is mentioning, yeah, that's Ronnie Howard's brother, Clint, the greatest second banana in history. Wasn't that, what's his name, from McCord? McLeod, right? Wasn't the father? The father was. You know who I mean? The tall, lanky. Wasn't he the father? Wasn't he the park ranger in Gentle Ben?
you're really stretching my knowledge of these things. Well, so, I'm trying to make the Google machine work right now, but I don't know.
Dennis Weaver is who I'm thinking of. Dennis Weaver.
Yeah. But I don't know if that was.
I think he was the father.
Yeah, there he is. Dennis Weaver played Mark's father, Park Ranger.
There
Tom
you go.
Widlow.
There you go. Dennis Weaver in McCloud, the NBC Mystery Theater.
I know Kenny's getting lots of play for his bear quote, but I just finished and we sent the May edition of Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred to the printer last week, and I did a 20-year look back at Smarty Jones, and John Service has a great bear quote in that story. So, you know, about Smarty Jones. So it's very timely. The trainers have gone down the bear road to talk about their top 3-year-old.
Unbelievable. Well, Joe, this is crazy. This is nuts. I got to get to Anthony Stabile today too before Tom Rooney. Let me get the quick synopsis from you. Let me reach for the charts, but from the weekend and at Butler and Middleburg.
Middleburg was obviously the big stuff. They had 9 races, the first open hurdle stakes of the year, and basically everybody showed up, which was fun. There were 8 horses in the race, and on that NSA ratings system, it was 8 of the top 12 ranked horses. And our 10-year-old friend, Snap Decision, just blasted everybody. He gave away at least 10 pounds and as much as 20 pounds, and won by 8 lengths geared down. So pretty impressive win, and neat to see a 10-year-old horse holding that form. And, you know, Noah in the Ark was second, you know, and he's established himself as a quality horse in the hurdle stakes division. Awaken was third, and, you know, he's probably a little less experienced than his other two, but another one who's kind of found his place in there. But you know, it's a shame. That race was a grade 2 only by purse. The NSA races are basically graded by purse only. The Guathamy is as historic a hurdle race as we have, and, you know, all things being equal, that was that might be the best field we see all year, or at least until fall, you know. So because the horses have some other opportunities the rest of the year. So he was pretty impressive. He just sat second the whole way, went to the leader. The hero next door was whenever we wanted, and everybody else was riding for second very quickly.
Yeah, Snap Decision by 8 under Graham Waters, and nice start to the season for Snap, who's now 10 years old. So, in fact, he's not going to be able to run in New York, is he?
No, which is a shame, and you can't, that's the rule, but it does play a little differently for the steeplechasers. It's not like he was running as a 2-year-old or, you know, he didn't really start his career over jumps till he was 5, I guess, right? Yeah, and but the calculus changes a little bit with the Colonial Cup rejoining the schedule in November as kind of one more championship grade 1 race after Far Hills.
That's
so
true.
You know, they got the Iroquois in a couple of weeks, which is his goal. It'll be interesting to see. That's weight for age. You know, he doesn't really have to run in another handicap if they don't want to the rest of the year, where the New York races are all handicaps at the track. So he won't have to give away weight unless he goes to there's a race in Virginia in the race he won last year in Virginia in October. But otherwise, it's level weights that he could run in the Iroquois, the Grand National, and the Colonial Cup, you know, at the top level. It'll be fun. It shakes out a little differently. I mean, that the Colonial Cup joining the schedule, and then the race next week at the Virginia Gold Cup is a grade 1, and then the race they created on Belmont weekend at Saratoga, the Steinman, is a, you know, grade 1. So last year there was just, in the last few years, there really hasn't been enough opportunity at that level, and now it really changes with just more opportunity for horses.
Well, a quick hit in on Butler on the Grand National, and then look ahead to the weekend, because the Hunt Cup, the $100,000 Hunt Cup, as well as a terrific card at Foxfield.
Yeah, Foxfield and all the Virginia meets deserve a lot of credit. They have really invested in those race meets. The Virginia Equine Alliance has invested some purse dollars at those race meets. The race meets themselves have stepped up by improving their courses, and you know that's a really strong card at Foxfield, which is great. I mean, it kind of we needed that. We lost the Queen's Cup race in North Carolina, which is normally this weekend, is kind of on pause, hopefully on pause, not on stop. So we don't have that, which actually helps Foxfield in terms of horse inventory, but it's nice to see. And they've got a great variety of racing, a couple of solid handicaps, a novice stakes. It's a good car. That's in Charlottesville. It's a big UVA tailgate scene, and another one of the cool stops on the circuit.
This Hunt Cup, you had...
Man, it's wide open, I would say. There's 9 horses in it. Without More Ado, won it last year, which you would have said was an upset, but he did not run very well and at the Grand National and wasn't going very well at all. And then I'm trying to figure out if he made a mistake. He technically didn't fall. The rider came off, but he was not going very well at the time and made a mistake and lost his rider, which would not give you a lot of confidence the next week. Kathy Nelson said she was bringing in her daughter, Skylar McKenna, who works for Jimmy Toner from Keeneland this week to try to help Without More Ado find his confidence over some schooling fences and things. So we'll see if he's managed to do that. Vintage Vinny's back at 15, yes, 15.
Wow, unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
He's won it twice. I don't think he's quite the horse he was, but he certainly knows how to do it. This horse, Wagner, or if you want to use the European pronunciation, Wagner, has done... He's being asked a lot of tough questions, but he's answered them so far. He was going well at the Grand National, and there's a couple spots on that course where you jump a different side of the fence depending on what race you're in, and he jumped the wrong side and was pulled up, but was going well. He was very good chase form, point-to-point form in England. Has switched to Timber. Is owned by Charlie Knoll of Mary Bell Stable, who we know from the flat world has horses with Nacho Perez, has some other horses, has horses in Europe as well. Really accomplished chaser over there. Timber's a little different, but I thought he jumped much better at the Grand National than he did at the Manor the week before. So he's certainly learning his lessons. And the rest, sort of, Royal Ruse has been around the course and likes 4 miles. He's got as good a chance as anybody, I would think, too. You know, but it's pretty wide open, I would say.
Really nice Saturday of chase action with the Hunt Cup. $100,000, 4 miles over the timber fences. And as mentioned, at Foxfield, for those who've never been, and I assume the weather I know is going to be nice here, so I'm going to assume it's going to be nice up and down the eastern seaboard. But this is a absolutely terrific, again this week, a terrific 7-race card that starts at 12:30. And maiden claimer, overnight handicap, maiden hurdle, maiden timber event, then the stake, the Van Cleef for $75,000, and then the goodnight shirt as well. You got 7 and 6 respectively, and then an overnight handicap closes it out. And another winner for, I'll talk to Sean next week, but another winner for River D this weekend.
Yeah, that first-time starter, Tis a Giant, who looked really good doing it. Jack Fisher won 2 maiden races there with first-time starters over hurdles, and both were pretty impressive. Tis a Giant, Florida bred from the Live Oak program, which is kind of cool. But Tis now out of a Giant Causeway mare, had run on the flat for Mike Trombetta, and you know he looked like a nice prospect. He'll get probably run and never won 2. Virginia Gold Cup, and you know, then go on to the novice division. Interesting. Kind of, again, the flat breeding of that horse and the flat breeding of Fisher's other winner, Kid Mischief, is out of, into Mischief out of Kitten's Point, winning his first time over jumps. So some nice horses come along that'll probably help the fuel Saratoga cards and that type of thing. Leslie Young won a maiden filly mare race with a first timer from Ireland, too. My Forever Annie, she looked good, and I know they're pretty high on her too. So, nice group of kind of young horses coming along, for sure.
A very good start, real momentum in the chase scene as we get rolling. And I should also mention, since we're talking non-flat action, it is the weekend of the four-star event, formerly Rolex, and it's changed. It has again changed advertisers. They have gone from Rolex to then Land Rover,
and
now Defender.
Yeah, which is a Land Rover, right?
Oh, is that a?
Okay, I can't afford the one of those cars, but yeah. But there's so that's this weekend in Lexington, right? Kind of coincides with closing in Keeneland and the start of Derby Week.
Well, it's always and Saturday. If you the thing to for those who are looking for something to do Saturday, before coming here for the night card, the cross country portion of the 3-day event is Saturday, and you've never seen anything like it. You've never seen. I mean, it is so harrowing. I mean, honestly, it's harrowing. You want to see a display of incredible, incredible ability of horses.
And just athleticism.
It's unbelievable.
Pretty neat. And there are several, I do not know them off the top of my head, but there are several thoroughbreds competing in that, which is kind of fun. I know Sea of Clouds is a horse that he's in I think they have a 5-star and a 4-star. I think he's in the 4-star. And then there are a bunch of others too, which is, again, showcases the wild athletic ability of these horses that can go do something like that.
Well, the Phelps, there's a piece that Nicole Russo, I reached out to Nicole. She'll, this is always crazy for her because she loves the 3-day, and it's hard because she's got responsibilities between.
No, it's the wildest time of year for everybody. I think. I mean, just the whole thoroughbred kind of world, steeple chase, flat, things like that. Everything they're kind of it's sort of quiet, and then
everything happens at once.
It gets here, and it just goes at about 100 miles an hour in 100 directions.
Well, she's got a nice piece about Mia Farley, and who is a big star on the eventing scene, and she's got her thoroughbred partner Phelps. We'll track. I always mention it every year, and I've gone maybe 3 times. It is on a nice afternoon. It is really fun.
Oh, yeah.
Really fun. Finally, we got just about a minute. Joe Clancy with us. Tom Rooney's going to join us next. Anthony Stabile and Jeff Franklin. We're going to Dick Powell is going to skip to tomorrow to preview the Champions Day at Chatin. How's your Derby? How's your Derby thoughts coalescing?
They're coalescing and they're not coalescing. I'm having a hard time trying to split all this up. I might lean toward resilience just because of the kind of versatility. It doesn't have to be in front, doesn't have to come from way behind either.
Right.
I think that's the question. Is Sierra Leone going to find traffic? I mean, you can't argue any of his performances and the way he ran, and is Fierceness going to run the way he needs to run if he's up front in a contested pace battle? I don't know. So that would be That's the only real thought I had. Watching some replays the other day, and just trying to think it through a little. I thought maybe Chad Brown's other
domestic
product.
Yep, domestic product.
He's probably a price, right?
He'll be a nice number.
And I don't know what to do with the Jet. Like everybody else, I don't know what to make of the Japanese horses. So
no, that is the
fascinating.
Yeah,
it is fascinating, but and I think it's good for the game, but it is a conundrum.
Well, you work on it, and next week I will have you and Sean together, and maybe Tom here live. Maybe I'll have all three
Sounds
of you
good.
Together. How about that? together again for way
together
more.
Together again, exactly.
Way more than the first time. Joe, I appreciate it, and this is horseracing.com, of course, next week for Oaks Derby coverage, but we'll talk about that when we convene next week.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Joe, fantastic. Joe Clancy, everybody. And there's another voice heard from in the and he careened us off into the cartoon arena of animals, not just live action animals. This is the craziest. I've brought up some nutty things over the years. The reaction to this is among the most notable responses. We'll see about Tom Rooney. I wonder if Tom has got there. He is. Tom Rooney is going to join us, and Tom, I've got a question that's a little offbeat to start us off.
Sounds good.
What was your favorite animal show growing up on TV?
Show or movie?
You can do a movie if you want to go movie. You can go movie with an animal.
I don't know if a dragon is an animal, but. Pete's Dragon was my favorite as a little kid.
Wow.
I don't know if you remember that movie.
Sure, of course.
I also loved Farlap.
Nice.
You know, because my dad and my uncle were watching it. I thought it was cool that, you know, they were into that. But, yeah, I'd say those two. As far as show goes, I don't know. Flipper.
nice. I'm big into Flipper. Flipper is a top answer. If this was what's that show? Family Feud. If it was Family Feud, Flipper would definitely be on the board. There is no doubt. This has been a very funny morning on this topic. The animal show phenomena. Good to talk to you, and I knew I would. I'll see you obviously next week for Derby Oaks weekend. But you and I, you hinted about this initiative, and the timing is good because considering this New York Times, Hulu, FX, whatever rehash of old news, it feels like it's an important industry voice to get out there in public. And make people realize the realities of the game.
Right, and I think even aside from that, you know, this is something that obviously that our industry has been building for years, and needed to evolve as a sport with. All the things that we're trying to do in racing is this ecosystem of care that we talk about, not only with vets and measurements and analytics and the like, to try to improve our sport, just like as I refer to time and time again, you know, what they do in other sports with regard to safety. We're doing the same thing, and it's just important that the industry as a whole is kind of coming together to participate in that so that we can show the world what we're doing to make racing as safe as possible. And so that's a big part of this campaign. You know, we've got a lot of buy-in by the people on the National Thoroughbred Racing Association board, which, as you know, represents a lot of the tracks and the Breeders' Cup and the Jockey Club and the like. You know, there's some holdouts. You know, you and I have talked a lot about the differences that we have in our opinion of HISA. But HISA is part of this. I mean, this is now a new central body that oversees uniform fairness across the country, or at least that's their mission, with not just, you know, what you can and can't do with a horse medically, but also the safety levels of the racetracks themselves. That's all part of this ecosystem of care when it comes to how what foot forward the industry puts. And you know, we'll keep having the debate with those that are opposed to things like HISA. But in the end, I think the big picture, Steve, is as we move forward, that we're showing why, not just with HISA and with this campaign and with the new measures that we're trying to do, and even things that we're trying to say with groups like Light Up Racing, that we're you know, moving forward for the future, rather than staying stagnant, not doing anything or not doing enough, or like living in the past. But I'm excited. I mean, you know, as you know, I'm active in Maryland. You know, we just got the legislature there to approve a new Pimlico, a new training facility up at New York. Naira's building a new Belmont. I mean, these are all positive things that we're talking about for the future. And so I think this campaign coupled with all those things is really exciting.
It's called Safety Runs First. There is a companion website, safetyrunsfirst.com.
Right.
And there's a commercial essentially. How is the publicity portion of this, the outreach portion of it, you know, what kind of, you know, where will it run, for instance? I mean, who are we trying to educate, you know, from a target audience standpoint?
Well, at the highest level, like you saw during the Super Bowl, when you saw some ads by the NFL that showed sort of the robotic animation AI type, you know, capabilities of modern technology to sense injury or concussion or what have you. As you said, from the commercial that you saw, there's the 30-second one and there's the 60-second one. At the highest level, we're going to be on during the Kentucky Derby to make sure that people see what we're trying to achieve. And then, you know, aside from the website, there's radio, there's digital, social media. You know, we're working with sports radio, you know, personalities and the like to talk about this initiative so that there's a little bit of a buzz going into the Triple Crown season. So, you know, this wouldn't be possible, by the way, without the help of the people on our board. And hopefully our goal is that the more this is seen and the more this is celebrated, which I think it will be, that more people will jump on board and we're able to expand it to keep the dialogue going.
It comes essentially on really ideal timing, Tom. I talked earlier this morning directed people toward Bill Finley's review in TDN of this so-called broken horses documentary. And Bill's going to join me tomorrow. Lisa Lazarus was going to follow you today, but she's got to push it to tomorrow. We were going to talk about, you know, you mentioned the AI. We were going to talk about the data-driven screening efforts. I'm going to have you put on your congressman hat with this. It's obvious from Bill's review that this is going to be a rehash, Tom, of a lot of old news, and not just old news, but old news that has got mold on it. I mean, we've addressed seemingly everything that they're going to trot out here, and not only have we addressed it, but we've had positive impact success. And
right.
That apparently is not going to be part of their conversation and their presentation. As a congressman, and when you're trying to control the message, or at least offset negative messaging, how do we stop these people from being dishonest, essentially, with the way they deliver this kind of information?
Well, the first thing you do is recognize that they're not going to stop. Steve, I mean, like, their whole mission and their goal is to achieve the end of racing, and they're never going to stop, and that's why we also can't stop in our efforts. But you know, this campaign that we're focused on, I'd like to think, is heads and tails, higher level and more important than what's going to happen on Friday with a 10 o'clock show on FX. This is going to hopefully continue to evolve and continue to expand well beyond just this Triple Crown season and beyond. I mean, hopefully this Safety Comes First campaign lasts for years to show the public and to show our fans all the things that we're doing. And things that we don't even know what we're going to do, you know, as Lisa hopefully will be able to explain a lot better than me, because she's much smarter on those things like analytics and AI and the like. So, you know, we are thinking much bigger picture. But, you know, when you ask the question, you know, why are they doing this? This is always been the MO of groups like this, to try to put us out of business and, you know, end a sport that's been around since the beginning of our country. One that, you know, has as much historical meaning as anything in my lifetime with regard to what American sport means. And I'm going to do everything I can to defend it. I'm not surprised that they're sort of running out the sort of same old, you know, clips and storylines. And it's fine. Hey, if you want to keep bashing Jason Service and those guys, great. But, you know, we've moved on and we're moving forward to campaigns like this. You know, unfortunately, the New York Times, I guess, thinks it's not enough and it's too late. But I don't. And I think they're wrong.
As I said at the beginning of the show, I mean, it as collectively as stakeholders in the game and in whatever level we're all involved, as horse players, as breeders, as owners, as at every level of the game, you know, the management teams and to be honest, the ancillary industries that. You know, that support the, you know, you got tax shops, you've got transportation companies, and on and on. I mean, what amazes me about this whole situation, Tom, is, and I do see it when we all attend the kinds of and back to congressional or legislative bodies when we are. Lobbying and advocating for the sport in the halls of Congress or in state houses, you know, we communicate that very well, and I think we've really turned some tides on that front. But in terms of the general public, there's got to be some messaging. And
right.
You know where I'm headed here, that the people that are taking this in, that are taking in the bashing of the sport, it to make them realize that they've got friends and neighbors that have a
their lifestyle, their careers, their businesses are supported by this industry.
I agree with you, and I think that that's, you know, one of the primary reasons, just like a political campaign, but the political campaign in this case with safety runs first, is that it's highlighting all the things that we're actually doing, not only with the programs and the racetrack safety and the medication safety and the AI and the biometrics and, you know, putting widgets on horses to try to measure if something's different tomorrow than it was today.
Yep.
I mean, we're actually doing things, but I think to go to what your point is part of Safety Runs First is to show the people that we're doing it. Like, you can do it and nobody knows about it, and then you have, you know, people that are saying you're not doing anything. You and I can sit here and talk about, well, yes, we are, but you also have to, do the things that we're doing in this campaign to highlight and show why horse racing is taking a step forward into the future. And we're doing all the things that we can to make sure, you know, conditions are safe, racing surfaces are safe, the HISA uniformity, integrity, which is independent and not, you know, part of some other entity in racing. I mean, that is all goes to the things that we're trying to do, in actuality at the tracks, but also messaging wise with this campaign. So,
well, and I do see, I mean, there is, you mentioned earlier about Light Up, which I'll come back to, but there's a very effective talking point in the website, safetyrunsfirst.com, and the ecosystem of care is the terminology, the four pillars of safety, ensuring fitness, optimal conditions, integrity and oversight, lifelong care. And this is a nice, four pillars, cornerstones, however you want to phrase it. You guys use four pillars of society, which I like. Ensuring horses are fit to run, maintaining optimal racing and training surface conditions, increasing
right.
uniformity, integrity, and transparency through independent and federal oversight, providing care throughout the course of our horses' lives. So aftercare is folded
yeah.
into this as well. So this is, you know, this is a comprehensive, from start to finish. This is obviously going to try to drive home, you know, all of the points within, you know, that essentially the lifeline, the timeline of a horse's life.
And I think it's important, especially that last one. I mean, like, we obviously take care of these horses and the people that are involved in the horses and the trainers and the owners and the people that have hands on the horse every day as they're getting ready to run. I mean, we've seen the pictures of the foal. There, you know, we got babies being born, you know, the mare, the brood mares, and the level of care that they get down on the farms, and to the point where, you know, they get started and they either go to the sales or they go to the track, and then when they're on the track. But I think that the last one's just as important because it's probably going to be the longest part of their lives.
Yep.
is what the aftercare is. And certainly I think that it's important for us to highlight the fact that we are not just talking about while these horses are performing as athletes, but also what Chuck Noll used to say, their life's work is going to be after, and that can be just as meaningful, if not more meaningful, depending on the discipline or the job that they get. Or if they're like my first racehorse that I ever owned, Lucy Boo, who's sitting out behind our house in Indiantown, Florida, just eating grass probably for the rest of her life, you know. So, but that, I think that that's all our responsibility in this industry. And I certainly take it very seriously in the job that I'm trying to do in Washington to figure out the best ways to make sure that happens. I'll just give you one little aside. You know, we've been working recently with some of our partners and the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and the like to see what kind of what kind of projects there may be with groups like Veterans Care and returning soldiers that might have PTSD and equine therapy. Is there some kind of funding or money for horses to play a role in taking care of our veterans when they come home? So we're very much exploring that right now as to just give another option for these horses to have a certain job type. Not every horse might be suitable for that, you know, type of program, but there are a lot, as you know, that are. I mean, I've gone to meet horses like American Pharoah who are, you know, docile as they can be. And then you meet another horse that you wouldn't want to get within, you know, 100 feet of. But every horse, like people, are different. And you know, if we can create different jobs for them to do when their racing career is over, we're going to do it.
I'm coming back up from that. This is a very comprehensive approach. For instance, in the first, you know, under the first tab, ensuring fitness, you've got expanded veterinary protocols, wearable biometric technology, as you referred, data analytics, advanced diagnostic imaging, on-site security and surveillance. Sections that touch on all weather surfaces and surface testing and maintenance when it comes to, you know, that aspect, meaning the maintaining of optimal racing and training conditions. Then that goes into the oversight, you know, keys in on NYSA and HIWU, which is still a work in progress, but, you know, there's countless, you know, the Safety and Integrity Task Force of NTRA, and there's been so many. That's one of the things, frankly, that makes me nuts, Tom, when it comes to, you know, the regurgitation of you know, incidents and you know, the kinds of approaches that these critiques take, because there's been successful responses and implementation to virtually every single major crises topic that gets pointed out, and when they rehash it, it's like they pretend that it's gone unaddressed.
Correct, exactly right, and that's
what is just sickening. I mean, because it's a complete misrepresentation. So right. I guess you just have to continually do this kind of project to reiterate and the one problem with it, and you know, you were referencing, you know, my frequent questioning of elements of the HISA HIWU execution. One of the things that they're actually a little guilty of at times is basically acting or pretending that they've reinvented every spoke on the wheel, when in fact there's been tons of work that's gone into even getting to where we are, and so we got to be careful internally too.
I hear you, and I do think that Lisa's sensitive to that. I think that, like, she's definitely not looking, you know, for credit to saying something that you may have already known for 5 years. And you know, as HISA and HIWU continue to grow and evolve and adapt, I think that, you know, some people have said that it's sort of like a problem that they, you know, adapted or adjusted. I don't. I think it's a strength. And so at some point, I think that we're going to get to the uniform standard that we all are comfortable with. Yes, the cost is a burden. And, you know, that's another thing that we're trying to figure out is ways to pay for HISA to be in compliance and to be there for that uniform, you know, the uniform regulation. The standards and those things aren't free. I mean, we have to, it has to be, you know, it costs money to be able to execute. And there might be creative ways for us to pay for it that we have to figure out. Some states, like my home state of Florida, has figured out a way by the legislature appropriating the funds to the horsemen and the tracks to be in compliance. that's optimal if states are willing. And I think a couple other states have done that too, but other states have not. And so we have to continue to figure out ways to be able to pay for it, because I do think that when you make the argument in a campaign like this, with safety runs first, that we are doing, you know, that we are have one of the pillars that you talked about, you know, with uniformity, and integrity and medication and the way that racetracks are constructed and maintained, to be able to say that, you know, costs something. And, but we have to be able to say that. We can't just say, well, we can't afford it, so it's not going to be safe. I mean, that's ridiculous. So, the people that are still critical of LISA and HISA, and the states that are, I think eventually are going to come around, because I think that we're starting to see measurements of states that are under compliance with HISA versus those that aren't. And I think that the numbers are starting to show that it's better to be part of HISA, you know, with regard to the amount of equine breakdowns and those type of things. So, anyway, I you know, I'm very excited about where we're going. And I think that, you know, this campaign is in part to show what we're doing, but it's in part to sort of give, I think what you alluded to, sort of like, you know, a level of confidence that for those people that work in the industry, that know that the leadership of the industry is taking it very seriously, to show all the positive things that we're doing.
And it's not a slippery slope, but it's a problematic storyline to try to author, Tom, because as we've said for years, you can't, for instance, you can't make, as an industry, we can't make meat fatality statistics. It's not something that we should be marketing per se.
Oh, I agree with you. I think that you know, you and I have had long conversations on this show and in private before. I mean, I just don't know how you could. I don't know how you could move forward into the future without trying to do some of the efforts that we've been doing.
Oh no, I'm all 100% on all of it. The thing that we can do, and in fact, I'm just looking at the resources and news feed section of the website. And visit the website, safetyrunsfirst.com. And just looking even at the links to the headlines, for instance, from Ray Pollock, keeping pace, horse racing deaths are down, is a headline we ought to embrace. I mean, the when we show that 10-year declining average,
right.
I mean, the problem is, of course, every so often there's, you know, there are slight spikes, but overall it just keeps going down and down and down, and we've got nothing but positive stories to tell, and on this on all of this topic, and this is a great you know, compendium reference back to Light Up Racing, which has, you know, they've got a very specific and responsive set of articles and things that are, you know, real public relations executions when it comes to responding to criticisms. I mean, there's lots of ammunition for us to educate and enlighten and win hearts and minds. And that's what it's going to come down to.
Right. I agree. And you know, Light Up Racing is doing a good job with all of that. And they're having seminars to talk about, you know, how to best achieve that goal. We've tried to participate. We sent Sarah from our office there in Lexington to go to the one this week. And, you know, we're going to continue to try to partner with them in any way that we can, you know, because we all, every entity of this industry, as much as possible, I know that's never going to be totally kumbaya, but we all have to be marching forward together, especially with what we're saying. And so, and what we're doing and what, you know, whether it's HISA or whether it's individual tracks or, you know, what have you, but Being the one thing that I would say that's the toughest part of this job and being part of this industry in the way that I am, as opposed to other sports, is they're usually like a league that all sort of like marches together, even though there might be, you know, a team or a franchise that sort of, you know, gets in trouble here and there. With racing, because it's regulated or used to be completely regulated by the states, you had different elements that were moving however they wanted to. And so I think at least when it comes to talking of safety and the things that we're trying to do in this campaign, I think it's really important to show that the people that are on my board that represent most of racing are marching in unison.
Absolutely. This looks like it's got all the right elements, and it can be a terrific resource going forward. And we invite people to visit first and foremost and see what's been done here, and then you can use it as a reference point for people that ask questions. You can show them what we're doing, always trying to educate and win hearts and minds.
Yeah.
That's the key. Going to see you here next week, but in the meantime, you're starting to zero in on a Derby horse?
I saw Fierceness absolutely destroy the company in the Florida Derby. I mean, it was, it was so easy, and I'm always partial to the Florida Derby winner. I also know that I think the race before that for him was the Holy Bull, I believe.
Yep.
And he had trouble in company. So I think that, people say, well, there's 20 horses in this race, so he's going to have company. If he can get out unscathed, I think that he's going to be hard to beat. But if he does get bumped around at all and he hasn't matured beyond being able to do so and shake it off, I'm not sure. I haven't seen Sierra Leone in person. When I say in person, I mean, like, I go to the paddock. I do all the stuff that my grandfather taught me to do. We have this routine. And so, I don't like to make a prediction just based on what I see on TV and what the talking heads say. So I'm gonna spend a lot of time this week, especially at the track and watching them work and that kind of thing. But I think Fierceness is the one to beat, especially if he can get free. So, by the way, Steve, can I change my answer to from Flipper to a different animal show?
Of course.
I was just thinking. My favorite show when I was a little kid, by far, my brother was Grizzly Adams. We always watched that show. I loved it.
Well,
Ben the Bear. Remember that show?
Yeah, I forgot that he had that. I was not a big fan of that, but I do remember that he had a bear as well.
Yeah.
And that's right.
What are some of the other shows that you talked about?
Oh, my God. Lassie, of course. I mean, Lassie's the mother of all animal shows, certainly the mother of all dog shows. Flipper. This all came about because of Kenny McPeak and his bear references. So we're now going to start calling him Gentle Ken. So that's what got this started. So Gentle Ben is in the conversation. There was a big push for the catch-all, which is Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. That
I like that show too. I don't know. I don't, that was more of like a sort of a documentary.
Yes,
every week.
Yeah,
but
exactly. There was a doctor.
I can't believe you didn't like Grizzly Adams.
I don't know what it was about. I don't know what it was about the Grizzly Adams. I just never watched it. We got my friend Flicka. Flicka got a couple of pushes. Rin Tin Tin. Is big. All the Gene Autry, Roy Rogers crowd, those are guys a little older, Trigger and what was Roy was Trigger, Gene Autry's horse, Sparkle, not Sparkle. I think that was that.
That's before my time.
All right. there's others. There's a few, there's there's other, it's crazy how, when I tell you this has had a huge response, I you can't believe
I'm sure.
It's very funny. But Grizzly Adams, a new entrant, and if you're going to do a movie, I'll give you a movie for the grandkids. Although, well, the yearling, if for those of you that like the yearling, and yearling is sad, I've got another one like that a little bit. Ring of Bright Water.
Ring of Bright Water?
Ring of Bright Water.
Okay. I haven't heard of it. I'll watch it.
Why, pull up Ring of... And do you like otters?
Otters?
Otters.
Sure.
Everybody loves... Otters are very popular. They've had a big push. It's about an otter. It's a fabulous... I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's the same... It's that Bill Travers and Mary... The same couple from Born Free.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's, or maybe the same author that wrote Born Free. I don't know. But Ring of Bright Water.
We just saw the Marky Mark movie, Arthur the King, about this dog that follows these ultimate racers through the jungle of, well, I guess they're in like Dominican Republic.
Bolivia. So it's a crazy story. That's a true story.
Yeah.
And it's
unbelievable.
Nuts. Yeah. I saw the documentary on, it was on... was it on 60 Minutes, maybe?
I don't know. I didn't. I just my son wanted to go see it, so we saw it.
It is the documentary that actually catches the group. It's the craziest story ever. They took this. It's this extreme condition marathon.
Right.
That involves canoeing and the mountain climbing and crazy stuff for like 3 weeks or a month, and this dog, they find this dog in one of the stops, and the next thing they know, the dog is following them. It's unbelievable.
Right. It was cool.
I love it. We love animals. That's the message here is.
That's right.
That's the message.
Shocker.
Tom Rooney, I know you got a meeting coming up. I'll let you go, and I will see you next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Always great. Tom Rooney, he's fun. He's smart. He's been a terrific addition to the industry direction, management, etc. Let me get... we got to get that boy. I knew today was, I here come the, and I just got a text that I didn't get to. Eric, I know you're listening, and I'll just say that I did not want to go down that path. About the one statistic, one thing that's being, I was sort of catch-all referencing, HISA sometimes, either posturing like they're inventing the wheel. There's also a few elements that are just fairly being misrepresented, and that includes this anthem that things are safer in the HISA sphere than in the arenas where HISA is not in control yet. There's some very explainable elements to that, including, for instance, synthetic tracks. The synthetic tracks obviously make any group of statistics look better, and there's none in the non-HISA tracks, quote unquote. So to posture that things are safer, it's kind of a misnomer. I mean, if you want to compare dirt tracks to dirt tracks, well then the net out, take out the synthetic track statistics. And again, I mean, we have to be very careful. There's no benefit to trying to use fatality numbers. All you can do is continuously say our efforts are working. The overall statistics continue to improve. It's a horizon. You have to take a horizon view. And I mean, there were, you know, we've cut fatalities per start in half in 10 years. So I that number continues to go down. That's all we should be saying. And trying to gild the Heisa Lily by saying, oh well, you know, in those outlaw tracks, stop with that. That's a canard, as we say. Yeah. All right, let me get, this is what happens. See, people say, oh, okay, you missed yesterday's show. This is what happens. We just, you know, things stack up like planes over O'Hare. Anthony, I got to get to Anthony. It's crazy. I think I better check with Jeff Franklin. We may have to table the win using Therograph to tomorrow. If Jeff is available, I'll find out. But in the meantime, we're not tabling Anthony. There he is, and I've been looking forward to this for a bunch of weeks. Anthony Stabile joins us, ready to take over the microphone duties at Finger Lakes on Monday. Anthony, congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. What's happening?
Here in Louisville and getting ready for Derby, but you've got the New York Derby, you got the Aspirant, the Lady Finger, you got the George Barker, you got your own stakes to worry about.
14 stakes over the 91-day meet up in Farmington. Yeah, looking forward to the New York Derby, July 15th on a Monday. So there is no reason for everybody to get in their cars and head on over for the 185-mile trek west of Saratoga and come on out for the New York Derby. Should be fun. Looking forward to this. It's going to be a new adventure, and I have never been to Finger Lakes. It's one of the few racetracks in New York I haven't visited, and we'll knock it off the list this coming Monday.
You're going to love it. As I describe it, a clean, well-lighted place. It's a sweet, you know, there's a certain era that is very recognizable from when it was built, and it's a terrific little track. This has got to be so exciting for you. I mean, talk about doing this and how it's going to fit in. Are you still going to, be doing some harness work and talk about getting the call and discussing it and taking this job and what it means to you?
It wasn't Tinkers to Evers to Chance exactly, but it was Beam to Kalo to Stabile. Kalo gave Beam a call. Tony Kalo, former voice of Finger Lakes, now down at Ellis Park and Turfway Park and, working for Churchill Downs. And Tony gave Beam a call and said, hey, what do you think about Anthony? That would be a great idea. So Beam gave him my number, and thanks to Jason and to Tony. And Tony gave me a call, and it kind of happened quickly. I didn't have it on the 2024 bingo card, Finger Lakes racetrack announcer. So, it kind of developed quickly. I dealt with Todd Height up at director of racing up at Finger Lakes, and he has been amazing. And we are certainly on the same page to drive some handle and get some more eyes on Finger Lakes. I've been told by a few people it's nicknamed the Thumb because of its location in the Finger Lakes. So I don't know if I'm going to go with the Thumb because it would rhyme too much like dumb, and I get called that enough by my mom. It kind of developed quickly. I've been on this planet a little over 47 years, and I have wanted two things in my life. And the first thing I've wanted is my own announcer's booth since I was about 9 years old. There's a patch of grass in the clubhouse at Aqueduct Racetrack that my friends and I played on when we were kids, and guys I'm still friends with to this very day. I know Dwayne Dean's probably listening, and Stanley's probably listening right now. And when we were 3, 4, 5 years old, we used to play on this patch of grass. When I got old enough, I would just stop when the races started, when the race would start and listen. First it was Marshall, and then, you know, one of my idols, Tom Durkin. And I would stare up at that little triangle. It points to the booth at Aqueduct, shaped like a little bit of a triangle of glass. And I would just look up there and say to myself, I want to do that. You know, my friends wanted to be Daryl Strawberry and Don Mattingly. I wanted to be Durkin. I wanted to be, you know, Johnny I. And to have that now is pretty remarkable. Not too many people get to live their dream. And, you know, a lot of the things I've done already in my career did not exist when I was 9, 10 years old, right? Talking horses and Fox shows and FanDuel TV, and none of this existed. You became a newspaper guy, which is how I cut my teeth and started my career over at the New York Post.
Right.
And you know, we had 15 minutes on Wide World of Sports for the Triple Crown races, and then NBC and the Breeders' Cup. You never imagine, right, I'm going to be on Channel 4. I'm going to be on NBC. And I wound up on Fox. So, you know, it never existed. The booth existed, newspapers existed, and like I said, since I was 8, 9 years old, I was just like, oh, one day I hope somebody calls me their racetrack announcer. And every other booth I've been in, I've been at Aqueduct, Belmont, Yonkers for a while now. That wrapped up last night. The Meadowlands, I've called the day at a night at the Meadowlands and a day at Freehold. I've always been a guest. I've always been in somebody else's booth. And on Monday, I walk into my booth, and only two other people have called at their booth. Yeah. Ross Morton was there 45 years. Tony was there 16 years. I mean, I didn't know that, Steve. And that kind of hit. Like, I'm a very emotional person. I tell everybody all the time, I'm a big bear. 98% Teddy, 2% Grizzly. You know, famously, the Grizzly has come out in the last year. We try to keep him subdued now. But when I realized that, it never dawned on me. And I was just like, wow. This is pretty cool. Like, a lot of places can't say that. It's almost like dealing with the Steelers, right? Going through through a very minimal amount of head coaches.
Yeah.
Like I said, one of my favorites of all time, Funny Side, wrapped his career there on 4th of July, 2007. So we've had a Derby winner come through the gates and on the racetrack at the lakes. And, I'm just looking forward to getting up there.
Well, the racing and the racing has really been reinforced these last couple of summers, and the purse levels came up, and it's the product is very bettable, and it's got its absolute loyal followers, I guarantee, you know, with your following, there'll be people, you know, that'll tune in maybe for the first time starting Monday.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I think that's what everybody's hoping, that we can just get some more eyes on the place, because it really is a fun place. You know, there's a good jock and trainer colony up there. Both Ty Barcola, who was the leading rider last year, he won it on the final day, and Paul Barrow, and I've become friendly with Paul over the last couple of winters, having horses down here at Aqueduct. Both coming in to defend their titles. I know there's around 700 horses on the grounds already as we get ready for opening day. Both cars are out. Monday and Tuesday are out. First 2 weeks is Monday, Tuesday, then going forward all the way through Thanksgiving Eve. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, racing schedule. First post is 1:15. There are a few 1:20s in June. And then once we turn the clocks back, we go to 12:15. But, yeah, it's 91 days, mostly Monday to Wednesday. You go to FingerLakesGaming.com. There are free PPs in some way, shape, or form every single day available on the website. So there's no excuse to not have the dope in front of you. You can just go to FingerLakesGaming.com, and you can get all of the PPs for every single day of the meet. I know there's different deals with different companies, and I know Equibase PPs are available every day.
Well, you mentioned Paul Barrow, who, one of the most familiar names. Of course, Team Englehart, Chris and sons Jeff and Jeremiah. Rachel Sells, who has had a very good winter in New York. Watch for her. Ralph D'Alessandro.
Ralphie D.
Yeah, the Ferraros, Anthony and Michael, and Jonathan Buckley as well. Some of the big names, Jim Aquilano, right?
Yeah.
Deborah Breed, who's had stake horses the last, you know, has got, has that, oh, the big horse, her big horse. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it slipped my mind. Ryan Breed's up there as well. I plan on having Ralphie D. cook me plenty of Italian food while I'm up there. That's the plan. I plan on having Ralphie being, I don't want to say personal chef, but I plan on Ralphie providing some cuisine on a regular basis. I know Ralph, poof, my dad had Dale Cordova's book back here in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we're talking almost, I know Ralph about 30 years. And like I said, I became friends with Paul, Chris Progno, and some of the other quote-unquote Finger Lakes guys the last couple of winters, having spent some time at the Clocker Stand last winter as a stable agent. And yeah, just looking forward to getting up there, a little bit of a different experience. And yeah, Mile Oval, so I was told that they're perfect lines of sight, which is something that you, as an announcer, is one of the first things you concern yourself with. Well, what's the line of sight? And I also, unlike a lot of my colleagues, I like to call the races sitting down. Johnny I called them sitting down, and he explained to me how you kind of lock your elbows in a little bit more with the binocs, and he was 100% right. I noticed that my abilities and my race calling techniques kind of, they honed and they got better when I sat down. Because you just have the program in front of you and your arms are kind of locked in. It's a really, it's a nice way to do it. So the booth is set up nicely. And, you know, yeah, just looking forward to getting up there. And, you know, like I said, I think when you're in somebody else's booth, the job you have is to, A, give the fans the best information possible. B, entertain. But C, and it's almost as important as A and B, is you protect that person's booth. Right, I'm 47, but I'm an old 47. I'm still a little bit of a traditionalist, and I'm a romantic, and I have respect for that booth. So now I get my own booth. So I'll do some things a little differently. I'll do some things I haven't done before in the past, and a brand new experience that I'm really looking forward to.
Well, looking forward to hearing you over the PA, over the simulcast, and we usually get through as well. And I'll check in with you. I mean, happy to, you know, always include Finger Lakes action. And I know Seth will have you on as well as the season gets going. And everybody excited for you, Anthony.
Yeah, I know. It's the outpouring of congrats has been really, really nice. You know, it's been a wild year for me personally, and to be given this opportunity. And you know, it started at Yonkers. The folks over at Yonkers, after everything that happened, welcomed me with open arms, and the Meadowlands, Jason Settlemore over at the Meadowlands, you know, got me some work as well. I was in the booth there, did some TV. We're gonna be doing some TV at Finger Lakes as well. Me and Dave Matthijs, who's been doing TV up there for forever, it seems. We're going to do the morning show together. So it's going to be, you know, hopefully get some more eyes on that before the races. Still figuring out exactly when. I would check in and around an hour before post, right after I do the changes. We're going to do the show together in the morning, and then Dave prattles before the post parade. I reiterate my selections right after the post parade. So, you know, you only can just hear me, but everybody gets to see this beautiful mug as well right before the races kick off up at Finger Lakes.
Well, it's a great opportunity, and you'll love everybody that the regulars there, you know, there's a whole circle of characters that are there every single race day, and they'll be introducing Judge Coker is the ringleader. Bill Coker will guarantee that you'll be fast friends, and he'll be your guide.
I look forward to meeting everyone up there. Yeah, that's what Ty was telling me, that everybody's really excited, and I'm looking forward to meeting some people. You know, when I was with HRRN, I used to bounce around. We used to go down to Laurel for Maryland Millions and out to Penn National for Penn Mile. And that was one of my favorite nights of the year because, you know, the smaller tracks, they have this rabid following. And, right, there'd be 5,000, 6,000 people out at Penn National for Penn Mile night. and everybody would come over to the makeshift booth and want to stay alone. And I was out there with Christina McManigan and Steve Grabowski made trips with me, and we would just go. And you know, we would all be so, because when you're at Aqueduct in Belmont, you're kind of like, we're an afterthought at some point. I used to do the show in long shots at Aqueduct. Nobody would ever bother me. I'd come out to Penn National for the night, there'd be 50 people lined up to say sure. hello and talk.
Exactly.
So I love that feel. And from what I've been told by almost everyone, that's kind of how it is at Finger Lakes. So 100%. I'm looking forward to that aspect as well.
100%. You're going to love it, and they're going to love you. We got a couple of minutes. I got to, since I'm sitting here in the Downs, what are your Derby thoughts?
I'm not picking Fear. I'll be at Mohegan Sun, Connecticut for the Derby, as I am almost every year. I'll be there for all three this year, actually, Derby, Belmont, and Breeders' Cup. I don't want Fierceness, and I don't want Sierra Leone. I don't think Fierceness is going to clear. I'd imagine that with the blinkers going on door knock, and after the failed experiment last time, there's got to be a suicide mission, for lack of a better term, from that camp. So I would imagine he's going. I mean, you know, Fierceness is like the real Slim Shady. Harkening back to the jockey karaoke of 2019, will the real Fierceness please stand up? If he gets any pressure, it bothers me that he does not really seem to want to take some pressure. It's the Kentucky Derby. And the Sierra Leone, that last to first move four wide works on the first Saturday in April at Keeneland. It does not work on the first Saturday in May in Louisville when there's another 7 to 10 horses in front of them. So I'm going to look somewhere else. I haven't finished all the dope. Resilience is the first horse that pops into my mind just because he's supposed to get the Derby trip, right? 4 or 5 lengths off the lead, depending on how fast the pace goes. Belmont's Barn has been on a fantastic run the better part of the last 18 months to 2 years. He's supposed to get the right kind of trip. I think, I think his pedigree lends to getting that extra furlong. He certainly looked like he wasn't really coming to a stop in the Wood Memorial. So if you put a gun to my head right now, 9 days out, I'd probably pick Resilience, but I want to take a good look at the PPs.
Anthony, I appreciate this, and we'll talk during the season. FingerLakesGaming.com for the website, and the season starts Monday. First couple of nice cards ready for perusal, and I wish you the absolute best, and looking forward to it. I'll talk during the season.
Thanks, Steve. Looking forward to it as well. Thanks, everyone.
Anthony Stabile joining us, and he's headed to Farmington, and... It so deserves a chance like this. It's just great. Really nice. I'm waiting. I did not hear back from Jeff. I was a little late getting to him. So I do not. I'm hoping that we'll be able to get Jeff in tomorrow. At the very least, I'll do the. If Jeff is not available tomorrow, I will give you the win using Thoroughgraph segment. And it's the Royal Heroine, the mile fillies and mares. Goes as the 9th at Santa Anita and the 9th here, the Roxalana, at Churchill. 10-horse field of fillies and mares. A good race. The overnight stake, $200,000 for the overnight. Tomorrow we'll talk certainly with Hammer about Kentucky Downs. Actually, we got a lot of seasonal. All right, Jeff just... Jeff cannot make it tomorrow, but so I will do. Maybe we'll be able to extract Jerry. Is that possible? I'm going to try. Thanks to Anthony Stabile, Tom Rooney, Joe Clancy, Sid. Sorry, watch Better Refocus. Brought to you by Hill and Dale. Steve Asperson. We had a really fun, 40 minutes with Steve. Did I miss anybody? Is that everybody? Jeff's been listening. He says Jaws is his favorite animal from a TV or movie. That is great. Terrific. That was good. That was funny. Replay 6 to 9 if you missed anything, and Twin Spires weekend preview under the Twin Spires tomorrow, 9 a.m. Keeneland today, some nice spots. Tomorrow's the really good guard. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
Radio. Horsemen, nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile. In the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both be run Friday, May 31st, on a card that also includes two Pennsylvania bred stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238. Nominations close May 15th.
We're racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting.